How you doing, wrestling fans? And welcome to another edition of John Arezzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast. We are the only wrestling podcast that brings you back 30 years with vintage audio featuring some of the biggest names of that time. For the next 2 weeks, we will feature one of the biggest names in the history of the wrestling business, a dear friend of Pro Wrestling Spotlight during the years it ran. Plus, he became a dear friend of mine to this day. More on who that guest is in a minute. But right now, let's first say hello to my co-host, the renowned pro wrestling journalist, Mr. Bob Smith. Bob, welcome back for another week.
I'm so excited for the same reasons you are, John, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Alex Robertson will be joining us later in the show. But also joining us is the one-man wrestling encyclopedia, and I think that's a name that Bob gave this gentleman, a Herald wrestling photographer, sports journalist, not just in wrestling, but in other sports, especially baseball as well. He's a reporter, and he's the dude who was my right hand throughout my career in wrestling, Mr. Don Leibel. Don, how are you?
Anxious to be back with you guys and anxious for what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. And I can't begin to tell everybody how much I've been looking forward to today's episode as well as next week's, because this has to be a two-parter. It has to be two parts on this one. And I think everyone's going to really enjoy what we got in store for them. But before we get into all of that, I want to plug our Patreon community. $5 a month gets you in the door and access to the entire Pro Wrestling Spotlight library from the first show in 1989, April the 9th, through February of 1992, with a new old show being uploaded each and every Sunday. You'll also get access to this podcast early and our sister podcast, Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, which covers the shows at the Mecca of all arenas from 50 years ago. We have levels for all budgets, and the bigger the tier, the more you get. We ship vintage magazines each month to patrons from one a month to four a month if you're an executive producer level. We give you vintage audio from the early 70s through the 1990s. Vintage video, 8mm films, unwatermarked photo sets are also a part of our Patreon tiers. And we do monthly video get-togethers with patrons. Just go to patreon.com/John Arezzi to become part of the community. So let's get a little info and let's talk about our special guest tonight. Joining us in just a bit will be Mick Foley, who was such a major part of the history of Pro Wrestling Spotlight. He's somebody that was on more than any other guest. And this week, we'll be covering some of the classic appearances Mick as Cactus Jack made on the show beginning in 1989. And next week, we'll feature his appearance at our first live remote on WEVD, which took place on February 23rd, 1992. Guys, are you excited as me for the next 2 weeks?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Bob, let's get with you first. When did you first meet Mick Foley?
I met Mick Foley at an independent show in Jersey, I believe. We only exchanged a hello at that point, and he was the opening match, and he wrestled. It was one of those sold shows. I think we've spoken about this before on the show.
Yeah.
This packed show that had like 19 people in a high school gym, with Manny Fernandez and Wahoo McDaniel and the Rock and Roll Express and on and on. Everybody on it was a star, Jerry Lawler, but there was nobody there. I don't know what the situation was, but they went on with the card, and the opening match was Cactus Jack versus Damian Kane. It was good. You know, it was really good. It was a great opener. The guys worked their butts off, and that's the first time I met him. And through you, I think, is when I really got to know Mick. And you can go on more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you went on some of our bus trips too, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Was he on any of those bus trips that you were part of?
I don't recall him being on the bus with me personally. Mm-hmm. I had my own little entourage of a photographer and other people too. So, but I don't recall that. But I know that you and I spent a lot of time in arenas with that guy. That's for sure. Or not even arenas, but high school gyms and smaller places. And, you know.
Yeah, I know we did some play-by-play together for his series with Eddie Gilbert, or you were next to me as I was doing play-by-play when he got his head caught in the barbed wire.
That's the only time in my life I ever yelled, stop the match.
Yeah, and I have it on tape.
Yeah, and I meant it.
Oh, yeah, me too. I was like, I was freaking out because he was literally tangled in this barbed wire. He was getting choked out. It was horrible to see. It was so
clumps
boring.
Of his hair were being pulled out.
Yeah, it was insane. That was an insane night that Joel Goodhart promoted. And Don, of course, you know Cactus and spent a lot of time with him.
My first time that I saw him live and in person, 1988, it was in Memphis, Tennessee. There was a wrestling convention. I was at WMC Channel 5 there on a Saturday morning, and Cactus was there. And then he was there for the Mid-South show. I believe that was on Monday. Mm-hmm. And I took a nice pose shot of him holding his whip. He had on a vest, and he was very cordial, very cooperative. And on that same time, on the same Saturday morning live show at the TV station was Sid Vicious. First time I saw him. So it was a lot of fun to be in Memphis and see Cactus.
Yeah, so this was kind of pre-Texas for him, I would guess, right?
Yeah.
You know, he went to Texas with Gary Young and, you know, had the feuds there. But, yeah.
You know, Don, one of my great wrestling memories was being on the Channel 5 show from that studio, as well as the Jerry Lawler show. I was a guest on that show. And Memphis, say what you want about it, it was one of the great proving grounds for good young wrestlers who would later become stars. During one time when I was there, there were two rookies, Sabu and Rob Sikowski, who we all know better as Rob Van Dam now. Mm-hmm. And they were making the $25, you know, or whatever it was they were being paid. And Rob Van Dam had a match with Nightmare Danny Davis that to this day is one of the best openers I've ever watched. So say what you want about Memphis. If they brought Cactus in, I didn't even know he worked that territory.
Well, at that time, Memphis and Texas were exchanging talent. They were working in both places. Jeff Jarrett was on a show. Maybe Gary Young was there. Kerry and Kevin Von Erich came in for the show. Frank Dusick was the guy chaperoning them there. Mm-hmm. So they were exchanging people.
Yeah, when I was there, Eric Embry had the book. Mm-hmm. You know, so that I think those are two slightly different time periods, but still magic going there, isn't it? I mean, it was really a thrill to be involved with that TV station and those wrestlers. It really was.
Mm-hmm. I love studio wrestling. I mean, I think some of the glory days of for me watching NWA from TBS inside the studio, you get that up close feeling. You hear that slam on the mat so much better. And I went there twice in Memphis and really enjoyed the experience.
And you're right. It was Monday night cards there. You know, Monday they would do Saturday TV live for the Monday shows that they had. And it was had a flavor unlike anywhere else. For my money, the greatest local promotion TV show ever, I think, because it lasted so long, decades, literally.
That's a regret of mine. I never got a chance to go to Memphis for a TV taping there. I don't recall that I had that opportunity. And the more you hear about it and how classic it was and what a great territory it was for so many years. You know, and so anyway, Mick Foley there. And of course, we all spent time with him, a lot of time with him and Don. And I do remember one convention in 1991 that we did a live remote. And you have the great picture of you and me and Cactus sitting together during that broadcast. And those were special memories. It really was. I have so many special memories of Mick, and we're going to be going over so many cool things, over the next 2 weeks. This first week will really feature a lot of some of the classic clips. We have seven of them all together. that are really kind of benchmarks in the history of Cactus Jack on the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. We won't give any spoilers right now. We'll wait for our special guest so we can go over all of that stuff. But I really look forward to today's adventure with Mr. Foley and to reminisce a little bit. And I know, Don, you got a few really cool questions for him on some things that are maybe even outside the realm of pro wrestling. Sure. And, of course, Bob, you know, your relationship. And I don't think that you've seen Mick or talked to him in a lot of years.
The last time I ran into Mick Foley was totally by chance. I ran into him and his kids at Shea Stadium in the mezzanine. He was about five rows in front of where I was sitting.
No kidding.
So I walked down and I said, "Hey," and he went, "Hey." It was just like that. It was just old times again. And we sat and talked old times for a while.
That's awesome.
And dropped some names. And he was still the same guy. You know, he's, For anybody who's ever met Mick Foley, from anybody who ever got an autograph to us in the business who had to deal with him, nobody was a bigger pleasure than Mick Foley. I mean, he was just a pleasure to be around. And you got to give him credit. You know, he wasn't full of, Cabe Fabianess or whatever you want to call it. He was a very warm, very real human being who just happened to love wrestling even more than we did. Because he's the guy that put his body and his soul on the line to entertain the fans for decades.
Oh, he did. And he was so good to the fans, and he is to this day. I mean, even back then, I remember us taking a listener to lunch at the Ground Round on Long Island. I mean, just we met at the Ground Round. It was Andrew Goldberger, who we've all talked about here. And Mick was extremely nice to him, and as every fan. And there was, of course, one of the legendary fans of the show, Ski from Hicksville. Ski was an interesting character, to say the least, and he's no longer with us. But every time that Cactus would hear his voice when Cactus was a guest and the caller was Ski, or Ski happened to be in the studio, Cactus would just start screaming on top of his lungs.
That high pitched nasal wail that he used to do.
Yeah.
And I think, here's the beauty part. I don't think he was faking it either.
No, I mean, he just, the guy was an interesting character for sure. Ski was, and a good soul and all of that. And Cactus also, we even had a couple of video parties over at Vinny LaFranco, Vinny from West Babylon, who was a producer for the show for a while. And Cactus showed up at his house and, you know, watched pay-per-view. And I think he brought his wife, who was his girlfriend at the time, Colette, there. So a lot of great memories with Mick Foley. And we're going to go over some of these great memories, and we'll just have a great time with this today. From 1989 throughout the entire run, this is a real special thing for us. Mick Foley is joining us. Mick, welcome to the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And it's been an interesting, I haven't said that on radio in a very long time.
Wow, yeah. This is some type of anniversary you have going on, John?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was 30 years ago to the week that you did a live remote with us, WEBD Radio, 10:50 a.m. with our partner and producer, Mr. Vince Russo, at the time. And it was in Brooklyn, New York. And we felt that 1992 was a pivotal year for you. But you go way back with the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. I mean, we really watched you evolve from your first appearance, which was September of 1989, through your first entree into the NWA, you leaving them, you meeting your wife, Colette, Herb Abrams, heading to Japan for the first time, your feud with Eddie Gilbert, rejoining WCW, and through an amazing year, which really, with this episode, kind of culminates with 1992, which was a really breakthrough year for you as well. So lots of history there, and we're going to share some really special things with you today. So welcome once again.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
So why don't we get started? I met you for the first time, Mick, September 17th, 1989. I was introduced to you by a guy named Al Schaefer, whose ring name was Broadway Sonny Blaze.
Yep.
And I didn't know too much about you. I had just gotten back into the wrestling business. I had heard your name, and he said, this guy is great. He's going to be a superstar. And I was like, please bring him on. He's a Long Island guy. And I remember vividly you showing up on September 17th, 1989, to a little studio, a little radio station in Babylon, New York, WNYG. And we have a clip of that. So we're going to play for you right now, first time you've heard it, a clip from the opening of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, September 17th, 1989. Here we go.
Hello there, wrestling fans. Welcome to another edition of the Professional Wrestling Spotlight, heard each and every week right here on 1440 WNYG in Babylon, New York. Very exciting show lined up for you today. We have a special guest here in the studio, someone who I'm a little leery about even talking to at this point. Has been here for about a half an hour, and I'm trying to get things under control in here. His name is Cactus Jack Manson.
Hey, listen, John. John.
Jack, what's up?
Now, listen, everybody that listens to your show knows that you were a washout. At my profession.
A washout, right, as far as what?
A washout, talent-wise.
I didn't last very long in the business, but I tried my best.
You were a failure at best.
Frankie Williams.
Being kind. Yeah, I'd put you in the same class as Frankie Williams.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
But listen, John, just because you're a washout at what I do doesn't mean that I don't think I can do what you do. I've come a long way to be on this show here. You haven't covered my expenses yet, and I expect to run things the way I want them to be run. I can push buttons for a living right. If I need to.
Well, Donald Trump doesn't run this radio station either, so I know what your expenses are like. I've heard from different promoters around the country the type of expenses you have. We're just trying to have a good 2-hour show here, and you know, I'm a little nervous, John, even being in a studio with you.
No, that's my point. If you leave it to me, let me push the buttons. It will be a good 2-hour show.
Okay, and I know you have an allegiance here with Broadway Sonny Blaze. Yeah, you guys worked out together a while ago, a few years back, I believe, when Broadway was just starting.
Hey, Sonny.
And, you know, we're going to be taking calls. I guess you do want to hear from some of the fans out there.
Yeah, I'd like to see what the people have to say.
Okay, 661-1440 is the number to call here at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight to speak to Jack Manson and Cactus Jack Manson, excuse me. Don't give me that look. I will definitely try to keep things under control here for the next couple of hours. It should be a very exciting program with Cactus Jack Manson. We're also going to talk about the big Clash of the Champions 8 program, which aired Tuesday night on WTBS, extravaganza to say the least, and the main event was a wild one, one of the wildest matches I've ever seen. We'll be talking about that. We're talking about our bus trip taking place October 28th, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, pay-per-view, NWA show, Halloween Havoc 89, settling the score. We're going to talk about upcoming shows in the area, but as you know, first and foremost, the main guest here in the studio today, Cactus Jack Manson. And I do have to say one thing before we go into our first commercial break.
Say it.
You are one of the roughest wrestlers I've ever seen. One of the best wrestlers I've seen in quite some time as far as...
As far as what?
As far as comparing you to some of the other roughhouse wrestlers that I've seen. Guys even like Bruiser Brody and, you know...
Well, that's a fair...
I'm getting nervous
comparison.
Looking at this guy over here.
Don't get nervous, John. This is your show. Uh-huh. You can kick me out if you like.
No,
but I do know where you live.
Yeah, I know you do. Okay.
Hey, John,
yes.
Cactus Jack has been compared with the former NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, Terry Funk.
Yeah, I understand that.
He's probably about
as maniacal as Terry Funk is. But what we're going to do when we get back from our first commercial break, we're going to talk to Cactus Jack Manson about his wrestling career, what's been happening with him recently. He's recovering from a severe injury. We'll be getting into all the details as far as that goes, and then we're going to open up the phone lines at 661-1440.
Broadway Sonny Blaze, those were the days.
Yes.
I feel like George C. Scott in Hardcore watching his daughter.
There you go.
Take it off, make it stop.
I mean, you haven't heard this stuff in 30 years. I remember that vividly. I mean, because you came in and you stood up for the entire 2 hours. Yeah. You didn't sit down. At the end of the show, I mean, we talked about, you know, your compensation or whatever. What did you do? Buy me a blueberry muffin that was half stale from Dunkin' Donuts? And it's classic stuff. Of course, patrons can hear each and every one of the episodes, patreon.com/John Arezzi. But that was your first appearance, and it was your first appearance of many. You had more appearances on the Pro Wrestling Spotlight than anybody else. Second place was Paulie Dangerously, Paul Heyman. And the evolution, I mean, you would just do you, what do you remember most? Do you remember, is this is going back, what do you remember most about this?
Well, I don't like to listen or watch my stuff because until you played that, I was under the impression that I was awesome on your show. And when you go back and listen, you just, wow, that was still very much a work in progress. I was still favoring my Southern vowel sounds so that I didn't sound like I was from New York. That was thought to be the kiss of death for someone, even though I was from the Southwestern, you know, the gimmick was Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. If you betray a Long Island accent at that time, man, that was considered to be pretty dangerous long-term, especially for, you know, babyface. If you happen to have a babyface turn and you didn't sound legit, that could be really detrimental. And so I was just trying a bunch of stuff, you know, like I did not, I've talked to you in the past about getting your reps in and how that's a, one of the drawbacks to talent today is that they don't have the reps when it comes to their character, and they don't have the luxury of failing on a, I would say that, you know, I mean, I was succeeding on a certain level, but I think in everything you do, you're also failing on a certain level. And I was making my mistakes and learning on your show where it wasn't necessarily in the mainstream every week. And I think I was really well served by that, that I was able to have an avenue where I could come along, get better as I went along. So even, you know, between 89 and 91, when I returned to WCW for the second run, there was a world of difference between those two characters.
Oh, absolutely. The evolution of each appearance that you made on the show, and there were well over 50 of them over the course of a 4 or 5 year run, your evolution was astounding. It was amazing to see and to hear as you started developing the personality for Cactus Jack and dropping the Manson, obviously, and then, you know, co-hosting with me and doing some amazing, amazing work throughout your career and your evolution, not just with your promo skills, but your evolution in the wrestling business. We kind of watched it evolve over the over this time period.
And you see at that point, you know, we very much protected the characters.
Yes.
You didn't come on a show out of character. So I'm sure there were times when that made for great listening and other times when you just wanted to, like, almost like the frustration I would feel when Robin Williams was in a great movie like Awakenings, dramatic role, and then he'd come on the talk shows and do his wacky stuff, and you're like, no, we want to know you, like, we understand, we don't need to be entertained 24/7, we want to get some insight into this character. So I guess it's like that in a sense that these days, if you saw someone show up in character on the Tonight Show or something like that, you would think it was I don't know, there's still room for the characters to work 24/7, but no question we protected the characters at that time in 1989.
Yeah, without a doubt. And the show was also in its infancy, and we started to get more inside after Ricky Steamboat had left the NWA and came on the show to talk about his contract dispute. And then Jim Herd came on, and the show slowly evolved into a insider type of show. Yeah. You always were able to protect it in a way where you didn't insult the intelligence of the fans that were listening, but you didn't also take them behind the curtain in a lot of ways.
It was no easy trick. You know, most of the time when I did public appearances, I stayed in character.
Yeah.
Even when I was being interviewed at a big convention, like, you really stayed in character. And like I said, that was what was expected of you at that time.
Yeah. And the next clip, I mean, we're going to you had just joined the NWA. Yeah. You had come on January the 7th of 1990. And we took some calls for you, and we had, you know, we had some really zany, crazy calls. Of course, you remember Ski. I mean, yeah. you don't have to start screaming, but yes, yeah, Ski was one of those guys. And we had this crazy guy from North Babylon, Joey from North Babylon, and then we had an intelligent caller named TJ from Deer Park. And I, when I was listening back to some of this stuff, I was like, this is a really cool one, because you were just getting your feet wet in the NWA, and then yeah. you come back into the studio to talk about it. So, Bob, why don't we get January 7th, 1990's clip pulled up, and Cactus gets into it with Joey from North Babylon, and here's from TJ from Deer Park.
Can I talk to you about Tesco Bank Pet Insurance? Because as a dog, I'd love to talk about it. Can I? Great. I could be covered for all sorts. And they give you 24/7 access to vet phone, and they make it easy as pie.
Wait!
Pie? Did someone say pie? Who said pie? Oh, can't have pie.
Tesco Bank Pet Insurance. Approved by Pets. Every little helps. Monetary limits, excesses, and exclusions apply. Arranged by RSA. Vet phone is provided by Vets Direct Limited.
And we're back with Cactus Jack, and we have a phone call. We're going to take it right now. I believe we have Joey from North Babylon. Joey, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, John?
Pretty good.
Listen, first of all, Cactus Jack, what are you, related to Charles Manson or what?
Uh-oh. We didn't want to bring that. We never wanted to bring that subject up.
Hey listen. Let's. What's your name? Joey?
Yeah, you got it.
Hey, Joey. Joey, get your phone book. Where do you live? North Babylon?
Yeah, I got a call him back. I'm disconnected.
Hello?
Well, John, I don't want
to. The phone.
Hello, are you there?
All right, Joey.
You scare him?
Joey, you idiot. Pick up a phone book and check under Manson and see how many there are. There's about 50 in Suffolk County alone, so you're going to claim that just because I have the same name, which happens to be a common name, that I'm related to one of the worst men who ever walked the face of the earth? This is. I mean, there's hundreds of people. King Kong Bundy was never confused with Ted Bundy. Dynamite Kid, no one ever confused him with
He's
Billy
back,
the Kid.
I believe, Jack.
Joey.
Hey, listen, Jack. Hey, look, I don't know. Your style's sort of, I don't know, you're going after your partner, man. You don't know where it's at. And don't knock Pete Rose, man. When you can do what he does, then you can knock him. If you're going to run, Cactus Jack, you better run. You're going to have to learn to button your way on. But you're in the NWA, the major leagues, pal.
Wait, what am I going to have to do?
You have to learn to button your way on.
To butt your way on, he's saying.
To butt my way on?
You got it, man. In other words, don't try to be a home run hitter if you're not, man. You better set up a goal for singles.
No, I don't hit singles, son. I don't hit singles. That's why I'm in the NWA, because I'm shooting a little bit bigger. Maybe if you get off...
I will give you one bit of credit. Anybody that would go after Sting has to have a lot of guts and drive, because Sting's a dynamic athlete and a dynamic wrestler.
He is a dynamic wrestler.
I respect you, and look, all I can say is lots of luck to you. I mean, you definitely have a style on your own, and you definitely move to the beat of a different drum.
But Joey, in all seriousness, please, do me a favor, okay? Look up in your phone book. Hang up. Look up in your phone book and count how many Mansons there are, and then call us back and tell us, all
well,
right?
Well, you're the one going out there trying to slaughter people, even your partner. Now, I think you're going to have a hard time getting by Lee Scott. I think Lee Scott's going to take care of you.
Oh, stop, man.
I have to disagree with that.
This is radio, and I can still see your nose growing.
Stampede organization when he's done with you.
What?
You might be wrestling in the defunct Stampede organization when he's done with you.
No, I intend to be in the NWA for a long time.
All right, Joey, thanks for your call, man. We appreciate it. 661-1440 is the number to call here at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And apparently, Jack has kind of riled some of the listeners up because they're starting to call in here. And don't mention that Manson situation.
No, because it's not fair. It's not fair. I mean, are you related to Mark Anthony? Are you
no,
related
not.
To Mark Anthony? Is Sonny related to the stripper, Blaze?
That's true. Are you?
I wish I knew her.
Let's take another call here. TJ from Deer Park. TJ, you're on the air.
How you doing, John? It sounds to me like Joey from North Babylon's doing too many sit-ups on the parked cars. I gotta tell you, Cactus Jack is one of the most commendable personalities I've seen in years in wrestling, from world class, and I'm not one to call up and kiss anybody's butt.
Yeah.
But the point of the matter is, he's a very, very good wrestler. That elbow from the rope onto the concrete floor,
you like that.
Which is all the way back to world class. That's a great move, to move with the clothesline over the rope.
Yeah.
I mean, those are innovative moves, and a personality like him, you need people like him, and I'm kind of surprised. Joey should be ashamed of himself.
Now, listen, I like your style, TJ.
Thank you, sir.
So you tell me, why should I bump my way on base if I got the round trippers like the moves you just said?
Yeah, exactly. Do what you want to. Nobody's saying you're wrong for what you did. Beat up as many tag team partners as you want to. Take a swing at Jim Ross.
Now, I like Jim. Jim Ross is maybe Jim Ross, I may have been a little too hard on him because I said he doesn't understand my personal life, and he apparently eavesdrops on my pre-match conversations allegedly with myself, and that's okay, Jim, because Jim, he's the first man to really understand what it is that I'm trying to get across in that ring there.
Let me just interrupt quickly. If people are trying to call in, we'll definitely get to you, so if it rings, just like keep it ringing and we'll pick up the phone as the calls come in. Okay,
TJ, you know, I try to explain to the people maybe by making comparisons. So I made the one about baseball, and Joey gets a little upset. He thinks I was a little too hard on Pete Rose. Now, are you a history fan?
Yes, I am. I can deal with the history.
All right, you can deal with history. I'm talking about World War II, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with the Allies, that's us, right? That's us, United States,
that's
of which
the Allies.
I'm a citizen. We were outmanned, outnumbered, out-ammunitioned. And what did we do? What did we do when things looked worst?
We kept in there, we fought.
And what did we drop on Japan?
We dropped a bomb.
We dropped two bombs on them.
That's right, I'm sorry, I forgot about that. Two bombs.
We dropped two bombs on them, and that's what Cactus Jack does. He doesn't fire pistols, he doesn't fence with swords. Why are these guys trying to throw rocks at a guy with a machine gun?
Exactly, the NWA is a place where you got to make a splash by doing things out of the ordinary, otherwise you're just going to be one of the little fish in a big pond.
Yeah!
Be a shark.
That's it. All right, listen, TJ, thanks for your call.
Thanks, TJ.
Wow. I have a question for Mick.
Yep.
The Manson name, where'd it come from? I knew you before that, and all of a sudden you were Cactus Jack Manson.
Yeah, first of all, I want to apologize to everyone from the southern part of the United States for the worst southern accent. Man, I didn't know it was that bad. And clearly I should have been arrested for thieving from Roddy Piper. Wasn't Roddy the man shooting BBs at a man with a, whatever it was, throwing rocks at a man with a machine gun. Mm-hmm. The Manson thing came about. I was Cactus Jack Foley in Memphis. Robert Fuller took me under his wing. And he said, you kind of look like that Manson feller. And I tried telling Rob that actually I looked nothing like that Manson fella because he was about 5'4", maybe 140. Mm-hmm. There was that famous photo of Manson when he was on LSD with the eyes, you know. Even today, I believe the thing that says "Be Miz" on his tights is actually from that photo. I don't know what the correlation is, but that's that famous photo. So I had the eye thing going on. But other than that, I didn't think I looked anything like Charles Manson. I didn't want what I thought was cheap heat, which I thought that was. But Robert Fuller, he mentioned it to Eric Embry, who was my booker in Dallas. Mm-hmm. When I got there, he says, doesn't it look like that Manson feller? This is before I actually started working for Eric. I think it was on Super Clash 3 when I met Eric. I'm not exactly sure. But all I know is when I came down the aisle for my first match in World Class, it was Cactus Jack Manson. Anyway, know that was on the menu. I mentioned it to Rob, but I wasn't comfortable with it. And Rob got real serious and he goes, you know, Jack, not too many spots in this business. Someone who looks like you, you could ride a good gimmick a long way. And that's when I decided, man, if they're going to call me Cactus Jack Manson, I'm going to be the best Cactus Jack Manson that I could be. At the time when I was given a chance to cut a few promos in World Class, I thought I did pretty well, but I think it was trying to adapt that, you know, that accent in my everyday life, because like I talked about protecting the business, you know, everywhere I went, I was going to be that guy, which leads to its own set of difficulties. But I'm really embarrassed to listen to it now. I thought it was good, man. But I think it's really effective to show that we are all works in progress.
Yes.
And that, yeah. I was lucky that I'd seen it in some respect when WWE did their For All Mankind DVD, which I thought they did a really good job on. And you could see me learning as I went, the same way you could see Ric Flair learning as he went. When they did the 30 for 30, that he didn't just become the Nature Boy. Like, that was a work in progress for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, the evolution, as we talked about, it's embarrassing for you to listen to that early stuff, I'm sure, now. I mean, but a work in progress. Your national exposure on NWA, your first run there, and the awareness that fans around the country then got of you. And then you weren't, you know, they weren't using you in the right way. I mean, you came on the show. There's so many times that you were on the show that either broke news or made news. You appeared on Pro Wrestling Spotlight on June the 3rd, 1990. Donnie Leibel started off with a great tribute of you. And then you announced that you had left the NWA. So let's go to that clip now, and then we'll get Donnie. Oh, go ahead, Mick.
So this was, what day was this?
This was June the 3rd, 1990. And so this was right around the time you were leaving.
Yeah, yeah. I probably had given my notice there. I don't think I was gone yet.
Like imminent. Yeah, you were just like, I'm out. And I don't know if you broke the news on the show or you told them first. I don't know. But Don did a wonderful tribute of you. And then we get the news that you had left the NWA. So let's get to that right now.
Let's hear it.
We'll have our female listener send in a postcard in a few weeks, maybe sometime in July. We'll have a date with Cactus Jack.
Enclose a photo.
Enclose a photo. That is a prerequisite. Okay.
You know what kind we like.
All right, let's not get into the blue area here. Speaking of Misty, why don't we get to our first phone call right now? We have Don Leibel from upstate New York, as we usually do at this time. And Don, you're on the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
Good afternoon, John.
You know we have a special guest here in the studio.
One of my favorite of all time, Cactus Jack Manson.
Well, hello, Don.
Hello, Jack.
Last time we're on, I didn't like you very much.
Yeah, I hope you don't hang up this time.
You better have a touching tribute to me, or I will be shutting you off real quick.
Okay, that's a deal.
So go ahead, Don.
Well, in an organization that has been experiencing growing pains since Ted Turner purchased the National Wrestling Alliance last year, Cactus Jack Manson has been one of the most welcomed and talented individuals to come aboard. His style and tactics in the ring at times are bordering berserk, but Cactus is never boring to watch. Since coming to the NWA last winter, he has arguably been one of the most entertaining and hardest working athletes on their roster. My apologies to Ric Flair fans on that, but he doesn't always have his hand raised in victory, but the bruises and the stretched muscles in his opponents' experience after tangling with him have been equally gratifying to Cactus Jack. Kevin Sullivan, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck have been among the big mouth behemoths that have hidden behind him and counted on Manson to fight their battles with and for them. Crazy maybe, stupid not a chance. He's progressed at a pace Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, or Stan Hansen hadn't experienced. With less than a half dozen years on the pro circuits behind him, not since the legendary Sheik of Detroit fame has a wrestler caused as much havoc in arenas as Manson. He's become the man the fans love to hate. Those potentially crippling wild falls Cactus has been taking through the ring ropes and over security rails at ringside are entertaining and worth the price of admission any time. As powerful as the Four Horsemen are in the NWA, individually, Manson possesses all the qualities to give them a run for their money. Starting with the elite group's leader, Ole Anderson. Judging from past performances, it's this man's opinion that if put in the same ring with Ole one-on-one, Cactus Jack would have little difficulty in kicking his can. The only act more criminal than some of his maneuvers on the mat would be if the NWA someday would become separated from their senses and lose his services. John?
Well, Jack, this is a... Do you like Don now after his great
I like Don, but I have one thing to say about his touching tribute, and it was touching. Is Don, are you still there?
Oh, yes.
Don, take everything that you just said about me and place a big letter X in front of it because it's all in the past. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's right.
I'm saying that I am no longer a member of the NWA.
What?
You say they've lost my services. Well, they have lost my services.
What are you talking about, Jack?
Hey, you hear about the Terry Funk I Quit match, November 15th, Troy, New York? You were there. Well, not only did I, Terry Funk may have quit a match, but I quit the whole damn promotion, and I feel a lot better because of it.
You left, Don, hold on a second here. You left the NWA, Jack?
Yeah, I quit.
This is a first, getting it right as it's happening, John.
Well, it's just a recent development. Maybe that's why I accepted John's invitation to come here today.
Well, I came. I wanted to have you. I know there's been a lot of changes happening in the NWA.
And I may be the biggest one.
Wow, that's
You know, John, it seems now that Cactus Jack has mentioned this, that there's been quite a few roster changes, more people coming that perhaps are being dusted off that we haven't seen in a few years, and I'd have to question them not trying to keep Cactus Jack and bringing back people that have proven that their best days are past them when Jack has nothing but a bright future.
Well, Don, it wasn't even a case of them not trying to keep me. It's a case of me not trying to keep myself because I was no longer proud to wrestle in the NWA.
What brought that about?
Just changes. Because there comes a time when I have to stand up and like what I see in the mirror, and maybe that wasn't the case anymore. Maybe I felt like spitting on myself every time I saw it because I was the furthest thing from what I arrived at. Right now, I'm the furthest thing from what I came to be when I was here first in the NWA.
Well, it's shocking news here at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and unfortunate news as well. Listen, Don, we're going to open up the phone lines to all the callers, and we appreciate your time and a tribute to Cactus.
Thank you very much. Sorry to hear that, and I'm sure there are better days ahead for Cactus Jack.
I'm sure they're going to be, and I'm going to get into that with him right now. Listen, Don, thank you very much.
Bye-bye now.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
We talk about evolving, how we even talked about your character then, you know, how that protection was there.
Yeah, I'm still embarrassed of the terrible accent, but also that I would go. Every guy that leaves a company has to fight the urge to say something about them, because, you know, especially when you leave out of frustration. But that strikes me as being pretty bold for a 25-year-old who just had his first. Like, I'm much more grateful now for that 1990 break I got in WCW than I sound then. But I was really frustrated. To your words, Donnie, I did work really hard. The character was being accepted and was getting over to some extent, you know, in a bottom of the middle, top of the bottom type of way, mid card. You know, there was some comedy. You brought up Brody and Stan, but I think when I left, I wanted to be more like those guys and less like mid-card comedy figure, especially when I met my wife and she really believed in me. That's my favorite part of my current tour, the Nice Day Tour, which you can check out at realmickfoley.com/events. I'm coming around. I love doing the live shows, and I love maybe 6 weeks ago, I found a way to get my beginning days, kind of tie them together, try to use some good stories as a bridge to the next part of your career. And I found that I really enjoy telling the story about meeting my wife and the ability that she afforded me to really believe that I was capable of more. But I believed it by virtue of giving up that contract, which would have been $1,500 at the time, which was a huge boost from the $300 I'd been making the last few years. I really believed that I was capable of more than I thought the company was willing to give me at that time. I'm not talking financially, although that did turn out to be the case, but I just thought that I had a better run in me than they saw me having.
Well, I mean, you talk about the influence that Colette had on your life during this period of time, and of course you met her at a promotion out in Riverhead, Long Island, I believe.
Yeah.
And I had had the opportunity to see your stand-up and your show here in Nashville at Zany's, and it was incredible the way you did piece your career together. And of course, it was sold out, and it was just a wonderful hour and a half just to listen to your stories and see the reaction of the crowd. But Colette, obviously, somebody that this next segment, it's from September 23rd of 1990. We had moved to a bigger station. We moved to WGBB 1240 on the dial with a much bigger signal and a much bigger audience. And you were in the studio, and a call had come in for you to talk to you. And she called herself Christine from East Meadow. Do you remember this?
Yeah, because it was my wife. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and here's the thing. I didn't know. And you played along with her. And I was like, when I listened to it the other day, and I was like, I think that's Colette. And I didn't even know. And yeah. I said, I think I'm going to pull this clip. And it's a short little phone call, a couple of minutes. But the chemistry between the two of you was evident there. And your relationship had really just started at that time. So why don't we give this a listen? This is on WGBB, September 23rd, 1990, with Christine from East Meadow, who talks to Cactus Jack.
Christine, what's taking Christine from East Meadow?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Thanks. Hi, Cactus. How are you?
Hi, Christine.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. I saw you last weekend with Abdullah the Butcher.
Oh.
I thought you were great when you took your boot and you were really giving it to him in his face and his head.
He likes that, huh?
Yeah, it looked great.
Are you a girl who likes violence?
Violence?
Yes.
Subtle violence. I know you love violence. What about in your personal life?
Well,
do you like a little violence?
I really like cellos and violas better.
I can't believe that. You play your cello?
Well, it's a play on words.
Oh, I know it is.
I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm kind of embarrassed personally.
About what?
I don't know, I'm kind of stumped.
Stumped?
I'm at a loss for words.
Are you always like that?
Well, no.
Or just with women?
Well, no, I don't want to talk about women because I have a beautiful girlfriend.
Oh, you do?
Who likes me without my teeth.
Oh, she must be crazy without your teeth. What else
it's an interesting
like
concept. You got to think about it.
Yeah.
Ah, I know. I know. Well, what type of women do you like?
All right. This is a dial a date.
Dial a date. Okay. Here's a question.
All right.
Okay. Profession. Do you like when you wrestle a guy that's bigger, like Abdul, who's threatening looking, or do you like to be the threatening look as opposed to wrestling somebody a lot smaller? Or do you like both?
You need a lot of help.
I need. What about you? You need help if you like cellos.
Would you like to get help together?
Oh, I'd love to.
No, I don't mind.
Yes, he's been in a loss of words for the first time on
Christine,
the show today.
Did he tie his tongue up or something?
No, I don't know. I'm not into that.
Christine, do you like my new beads and braids look?
I like them when you flip your head back and you bang bang when the guy's
and
on the
bang,
floor.
Bang. Bang, bang on the guys on the floor.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I make a motion as if I'm shooting
guns.
Yeah,
you wrap them up, and you're sitting on them. You go bang, bang. You flip your head back, and you stick your tongue out.
Well, Christine, listen, we appreciate your comments. I'm sure Jack does, and call back again sometime.
All right.
Thanks for your call.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye. Mark.
Wow.
It's almost like this is your life, man.
Pretty cool, because we'd been together about 10 weeks at that time. And I should have said you like the rough stuff instead of you like the violence. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, it's really. I remember that I was real shy, right? That was a cool call. So glad you have that. I'm still tinkering with that. It's what's amazing to me, John, is from that point. So that's September of '90. Mm-hmm. I'm basically 1 year away at that point from coming back to WCW.
Yep.
And I think in between that time you just showed me and when I debuted in WCW, made my return, I also got into some very gray Macho Man territory because I looked up to the Macho Man. We all tend to emulate the people we admire. And I remember Eddie Gilbert even calling me out and cutting Macho Man interviews. I didn't think I did. But when I look back at like stuff I did at Global Wrestling, I was like, oh man, there's too much Macho Man there. But somehow, I've talked in the past, not on this show, but it's in general about guys hitting their groove or firing on all cylinders. Like, I don't think I was firing on all cylinders yet, but I think I just happened to find that groove in that next year, mm-hmm. you know, by design. Like, I had an idea of what I wanted to be and how I wanted to do it. And I only really had that year to really grow as a character, but when I did get to WCW, I felt like that Cactus Jack, which for my money, best Cactus Jack versions of Cactus Jack were fall of 91, maybe going from the Eddie Gilbert stuff
yep.
to about my first full year in 92, and then the Cactus Jack that showed up in ECW and IWA Japan. Those were like the best versions of Cactus Jack.
Yeah, I mean, that's really right on the money because that's how we saw the evolution of your character and your development We're going to jump right to November 11th, 1990. And you did a number of personal appearances with me on the show in those days. And from my first convention, you were one of the headliners with Terry Funk and Ricky Steamboat and Bruno. And then we did a couple of other, you know, remote situations or earlier before EVD. But we did it. We did a, an autograph appearance out on Long Island in Hop Hog.
Let me tell you who was in it, right? It was Larry Zbysko.
Yep.
Nancy Sullivan.
Yes.
Greg Valentine?
No, I think it was just the three of you and maybe, you know, an indie wrestler or two. But you you decided that you wanted to have a rummage sale and you wanted to just kind of sell stuff that, you know, that was old clothes and the sink and your toilet. You had a toilet that you were putting up for grabs. So on this appearance on Pro Wrestling Spotlight on WGBB, or WBABAM as it was called then, you were in the studio with Killer Kowalski, which was an amazing duo. And a caller called in, a surprise caller, who wanted to make the first bid on that toilet bowl, and I don't know if you remember who it was.
I'm gonna write down my guess. I'm sure.
Okay.
Words, okay.
Okay.
Got a. Okay, so you see, I got the this mask, and on the other side, I've got my guess.
All you right. have the answer. Okay. So why don't we all find out together who made the first bid on Cactus Jack's toilet bowl?
When I was on here the last time, that the love-in slash garage sale, just a spark in my mind, and the listeners really picked up on it. It's really taken the imagination of the state of New York, Connecticut, surrounding areas by storm, and I really felt like I had to bring in some personal things, some things that really had...
One of a kind items.
Yeah, that really had my own personal history in them, and it's based on the fact that if when I was a fan... I would have liked to had my stuff. So now that there are certain things I don't need and maybe certain things that I do need, but I'm going to release, and I will be reporting all of this to the IRS. I won't be selling my gold glove or my silver bat, but I will be selling the toilet bowl is going, everything including the kitchen sink.
How about the contents of the toilet bowl? That be going too?
The contents. Someone asked if it was going to be a full bowl or not, and I was saying I certainly hope not.
We've got the kitchen sink and some wrestling items.
Yeah, you got some personal videos that you're going to be putting on tape?
The great lost WWF tapes. I wrestled 5 matches for WWF. And
against who?
Well, I wrestled the British Bulldogs and the Killer Bees and Kamala.
Oh, I heard some of your tapes can really rival that of Rob Lowe, too, eh?
Oh, that's from the that's from series number 2, the Jack tapes.
So... I mean, thankfully, nobody remembers them, but I thought because the John Anthony Izuru...
Yeah, what Mr. Funk calls me.
And the people here have been so good to me. I'm not really looking to make much money. I just...
Are you going
to
bring your jock straps, too?
Killer, anyone who's seen me in the shower knows I really don't need one.
So there'll be a whole slew of things that will be... up for a grab, up for auction next week.
Yo,
at this
vest, old elementary school textbooks. Uh-huh. I'm giving parts of myself out.
Elementary school textbooks.
Yes.
So there's a lot of personal artifacts. You guys are going to have a great time next week at Major League Images. We do have a few dealer tables left as well, but your rummage sale is going to be, I think, a classic encounter with the fans.
I hope so.
A one-on-one encounter with the fans.
I'm really putting myself on the line here, and if there turns out to be not much interest, I may just crawl in a shell and go work for the ICW.
Well, I tell you, that doesn't happen. But I tell you, one person, this is a surprise to you, Jack.
Yes.
One person has already made
I've heard this.
You know,
no,
you
I don't know
who it is.
I don't know who the person is.
You don't know who it is.
No.
We're just gonna
drop the bombshell.
We're gonna drop the bombshell right now because he did want to make that first bid on the toilet bowl, and if we have that queued up and ready to go, let's go to the. Let's unseal this bid for Cactus Jack's toilet bowl.
Do we have a drum roll, John?
I don't think we need one.
We have a special wrestling personality who I'll let introduce himself. A special bid for Cactus Jack's rummage sale, and I believe it's on the toilet bowl. Well, you know, I heard that Cactus Jack Manson was having a rummage sale. He was going to sell everything, including the kitchen sink. But the thing, Cactus, that I am most anxious to bid on, I'm putting a $20 bid down on your toilet bowl, Cactus Jack, because you've ridden in the car with me, you have eaten with me, you've eaten dinner with me, and you've also eaten my dinner before, you cheapskate. You have done everything, but you have never showed me your own personal toilet bowl. So, Cactus, a $20 bid on your toilet bowl at your rummage sale is being entered by me, James E. Cornett, and good luck selling the rest of that you know what.
Okay, that was
I'm shocked.
That was Jim Cornett of the Midnight Express, and he made that first bid on the toilet bowl. So next week it will go. If someone doesn't buy it, we'll ship it to Jim. He said to send it to him, UPS collect, and should be interesting.
There it is. Absolutely correct. You had the answer right.
Mick, you got it.
You got it, man. That was great. It really was. And just the chemistry with you and Jim and with Walter Kowalski there in the studio and you promoting this event. I mean, it was just so much fun. And we had such a great time during that. We're going to jump now because we just got a couple more clips and then Bob's going to take it over. I'm going to talk about that time at the Press Box Cafe where you were right in the zone of WCW. But on April the 28th, 1991, there was an infamous show at Plain Edge High School out on Long Island. And it was you against Sonny Beach, sexy Sonny Beach.
Was this the same show that the two guys were sued for assaulting a fan?
Yes. Yes.
You and I ended up looking. I was like, no, I saw that show. Are we talking about that?
No, we're talking about what happened when you when I actually got in the middle of you and Sonny.
So first, let me explain about the lawsuit. I see it in Newsday it was Johnny Grunge and his part superstar Mike Lane, I think was his. So I don't even know we went by Johnny Grunge yet at the time, but Mike Durham. They were a good tag team, and I see this thing, and the woman says, this man monster, she describes all these things that Mike Lane did to her son. I said, John, I watched that match. I don't recall any of that. So John and I sit down. We watch the match, and the kid, claiming to be an innocent victim, takes a full, like, 32-ounce big gulp type of thing, and he pours it over Mike Lane's head. And, of course, you get that poured over your head, and he turned around. He grabbed the guy for about 1 second by the collar. He just backed away like that. And that was the end of the lawsuit, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was the end of the lawsuit. But
well, it was good that the videotape was there.
Yeah, the videotape. And then you didn't have a lot of stuff that was being videotaped in the early 1990s.
No, right? this was handheld, too.
Yeah.
My sister was there with the video camera.
No, right. But that was also the day Sonny Beach and I had a pretty good rivalry going on.
Yes.
Wrestled all over the New York metro area. And there was that one night in particular in Staten Island. I don't want to say who we thought phoned in the bomb threat, but there was a bomb threat.
Yeah.
And about 2 hours went by, and I told Sonny, you know, man, we got to have to give him a great main event. And so it was a wild and woolly affair, and there was blood involved for, you know, a little first spot show. I thought that we did a heck of a job, but in Plainview, Arezzi tried to get involved.
Yeah.
He got involved in my business.
Yeah, I did.
What happens when you get involved in my business, John?
You face and you feel the consequences, obviously.
And he felt the consequences. Yeah, I dropped a big elbow on John.
Yes, you did.
That day.
It was bad. I mean, and, you know, the one thing I do remember when my, you know, with me, I was probably 350 pounds at the time. And when my brother-in-law and referee Ron Barrier tried to pick me up, and they finally get me to my feet, and I'm walking back to the locker room, as clear as a bell, you could hear a fan yell out, "Give him a 6-foot hero, he'll be fine." And it was, I wanted to laugh, I didn't laugh, but a few days later, we had Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Paulie Dangerously is on the telephone for the first hour. We're trying to get you on the phone, and I didn't know whether you're going to come on or not come on. And then finally, when we start the second hour of the show, we finally get you on the line for me to apologize to you for getting in your business. Paulie's on there with you, And it's probably out of the history of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight show, it's in the top five all-time favorite moments. And it's hilarious every time I hear it. So I'm going to turn it over to Bob to play this clip and enjoy it. I mean, because for me, it was an amazing thing to get an elbow from you and to get a headbutt and a kick to the stomach. But hearing you and Paul Lee go at it with me and just kind of humiliate me, it's classic. Let's give it a listen.
Okay, we're back for the second hour of the program, and we're joined here by Paulie Dangerously. And Paulie, you still there with us?
No, I'm somewhere else.
Okay, Paul, you know, I told you and you heard a little bit about this problem I had with Cactus Jack Friday night in Plain Edge. I stuck my nose in where it didn't belong. And,
and the rest of your fat body, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome.
I've been trying to reach Cactus for the first hour, you know, to render an apology, and he has finally consented to come on the air with us.
Well, good.
So I'm going to bring him on with us right now, okay?
You have to ask my permission to bring on a talented human being like Cactus Jack. He's a great man.
Yes, he is. And Cactus, are you there?
Hello, John.
I just want to just apologize for what happened Friday. You know, I suffered the consequences as a lot of your opponents have, but I just really didn't mean to do that. It was just short-sighted on my part, and I'm sorry, you know, and I did feel the consequences, but I had a friendship with you, and I just hope this doesn't really affect it.
Well, John, I know I've been listening to the show. I've heard Paulie. It's always good to hear from Paulie. And as far as affecting a friendship, John, there are some things that just can't be turned around. Sometimes fate takes us a certain way and things aren't meant to turn around. Now, I can forgive you for being concerned for Sunny Beach. I can forgive you for putting your nose in my business. I can forgive you for a lot of things. But do you know what I did when I got home from Plain Edge High School, John?
No.
Do you know what I did? After a lot of soul searching, I put the convertible top down. I took a walk in the park. Do you know what I did when I got home?
No, I don't, Cax.
I got engaged to be married.
You did? Congratulations.
I am now engaged to be married. Do you consider me a creative person? Paul, do you consider me a creative person?
I consider you the creative genius of professional wrestling.
Well, thank you. I consider myself a creative person. You know how long I thought about how I was going to get engaged, how I was going to go about doing it, how many different ideas of proposal I had? One of them, John, believe it or not, was to be engaged live on the air on your show. So everything was going to be great, but never... Never in my wildest dreams did I ever imagine that I'd spend my engagement night lamenting and crying and moaning that I've dropped an elbow on poor John Arizzi. For the rest of my life, when I look at that ring, I got to think of you. I got to think of you. I can forgive you for making me get up in that ring apron and put my hip through that once again. But I had my reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Paulie, you're well-read. I know you've studied Sigmund Freud.
Yes.
Two things kept going through my mind.
Yes.
I only remember two things about Sigmund Freud. I was in high school, and I remember signs for mental illness. And I remember looking at all the signs and checking them off one by one and saying, yeah, that's me.
Yes.
That's me. That's me. That's me.
Yes.
The second thing I remember is his seven defense mechanisms.
That's right.
One of them, I forget a lot of things, but one of them kept coming through my head as I analyzed the situation. I thought of John lying awake, hurting, his back in a knot, his brain in torment. I kept thinking of transferal, meaning I took my anger on something else out on someone who had nothing really to do with it. You got to understand, I just came back from Japan where they actually respect wrestlers. And then I come into Plain Edge High School, and with the exception of a bunch of people wearing Cactus Jack shirts, I may as well have been in the circus. Because they were there to see a circus act. They weren't there to see real wrestling. But Paulie, I made them sit down, and I made them like it. I remember seeing the deer hunter. I remember seeing the deer hunter when I was a young child. I saw it with a lot of relatives. And for 4 days after the movie, for four whole days, all the relatives could talk about was how much they didn't like the deer hunter. I didn't like that movie. I really didn't like it. But they kept talking about it. Do you understand?
Oh, yes.
They kept talking about it. It had an effect on them. So maybe the people in Plain Edge High School didn't like what I was doing, but it had an effect on them. There were no tears. There were no boos. There were just mouths hanging open. And why? Because I hated every single one of them. And Paulie, with you as my witness, if I could have spared the spit, I would have walked up and down the bleachers of Plain Edge High and laid a gooey one on all of them, because that's what they deserve. So they're going to try to laugh at me, and they expect to see their little wrestling show. Well, that's not what I'm going to give them. Do you understand?
Where's Long Island?
What?
Is that in Long Island?
Yeah, Massapequa.
Yeah.
Oh, Massapequa.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why, Jack.
Why?
They're retarded. Did you know that Massapequa, and this is a geographical fact, is the highest point in Long Island?
Really?
And therefore, the toxic winds from New Jersey can actually hit that town without having to descend and break up due to the atmosphere. And since the toxic winds come over, I think comes over the Verrazano Bridge, and it comes over through Staten Island and then hits Long Island, they're just brain dead.
You mean that smell when you pass by Staten Island may be responsible for
it? Yeah, it's not a paper mill. It's from Jersey.
Oh.
So it's normal for those people to just sit there with their tongue scraping on the floor.
Oh.
You shouldn't get upset at them. They're brain dead. It's a town filled with Muhammad Ali's.
No, it's, well, you know what? I mean, it's something of a revelation. I mean, here I am. John said that the tension was in the air at the autograph show, but I'd said I'd be there, and I was.
I appreciate that.
But I really, when I woke up this morning, I don't think I'd forgotten about you. Like I said, I got to suffer the rest of my life. Every time I kiss my beautiful wife, I got to think of you.
That's sickening.
That's the kind of thing that makes men. Well, I mean, there may not be no children because of you, John.
I got a suggestion for you, Jack.
What, Paul?
I would break up with her, take the ring back, leave, then come back later on in the day and re-propose. And then you don't have to think of this guy anymore. And
well,
plus, absence makes the heart grow fonder. So you might even appreciate her more the second time around.
Everyone has to think of John.
You won't have to think of John anymore.
There you
don't
go.
Think of John anymore.
I mean, what a classic bit. I mean, Paulie and just you. I noticed in that whole monologue that you did that you were, you know, there was a lot more substance to some of the things that you were coming out with.
Yeah, I was thinking, wow, I'm much happier with that.
Yeah.
Point of the evolution than I was at the beginning. So again, it goes back to finding your ways and getting your reps in, changing things out. Yeah, I'm really glad you had a chance to listen to that. I had not heard that. That was true. I did what Paulie said. We broke up instantly after your show and got back together a couple hours later.
Otherwise,
there'd be no Foley children. Yeah.
Right. There was a memorable weekend for me, and what a classic time in my life just to go through that and to have the elbow dropped on me from the hardcore legend, the Hall of Famer, Mick Foley. Our last clip before Bob takes over was we moved to a bigger station. We moved to WEVD. It was our second show on 1050 AM, being heard in 7 or 8 states. And you were back in WCW. We brought you in the studio in Manhattan. You came and you weren't feeling well because we had a couple of surprises for you. They were both very prestigious announcements for you. And we're going to play this clip right now. It's with Dave Meltzer and with Steve Beverly as we make an announcement of some wonderful achievements that you accomplished.
What day is is the
this was January the 12th, 1992.
Okay.
Okay, Dave, one of the reasons that we brought Cactus here, and Cactus, you don't even know about this. Dave, of course, your Wrestling Observer is the most widely read professional wrestling newsletter each and every year. You have a yearbook that comes out with year-end awards for various professional wrestlers and their achievements over the year. And this year, I think you have an announcement to make about Cactus Jack.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell Cactus here, being that I just added it up about 2 hours ago, that you won the Bruiser Brody Award, and I think that I completely concur with the viewpoint of everyone who wrote in. I think that you deserved it probably as much as anyone deserved it any year that they won that award.
The Brawler of the Year Award.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. John told me he thought that I might be getting that, and I told John that I guess the Observer year-end awards are the closest thing we have in wrestling to like a Academy Award type thing. So I'm proud of that. But you got to remember, I had a lot of good people that I brawled with throughout the year.
Oh yeah.
Well, Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert, that feud there in particular was one of the best feuds of the year, and that was brawl after brawl after brawl, barbed wire match, falls count anywhere, stretcher matches, and that was certainly a great feud as well, and I'm sure that'll finish high up in the Observer voting for this year. One other thing, Dave, I don't know if you want to mention it or not, but also there's a Wrestler of the Year category, and Cactus, did he manage to finish in the top 10 for that this year?
Yeah, I believe Cactus finished 8th in the Wrestler of the Year category, yeah.
Well, that's talking about a lot of pro wrestlers around, not only in this
country.
And
a lot of countries.
And a lot of countries throughout the world, yeah, obviously. Yeah. And Cactus, congratulations on those Observer Awards.
Well, thanks, John. And Dave, thanks to your listeners who liked the things that I did.
Yeah, well, I don't think that anyone's ever, like I said before, I don't think anyone's ever worked harder for their spot in wrestling than you have. So, I think that any awards that you get, you more than deserve.
Well, thank you.
Steve Beverly is on the line. Okay, let's punch Steve up. Steve, are you there?
Good evening.
How are you doing? You're on with Dave Meltzer. Are you still there?
I sure am.
Okay, and you're here at Cactus Jack. And Steve, of course, you're entering the last few weeks as the publisher of Matt Watch, which is considered one of the top wrestling letters in the world today. We've asked you to come on today because, as Dave Meltzer just mentioned to Cactus Jack, we brought Cactus in here for a couple of reasons, and one of which... Dave Meltzer mentioned to him just a little while ago that he won this year's Bruiser Brody Award. And, Steve, I think that you have something to mention to Cactus as well.
I definitely do. This will be our fourth and final Matt Watch annual coming up. It'll be published the week of February 28th. And I'm really pleased to announce tonight, we do very much like Time Magazine and try to select what we think is a person who embodies the spirit and professionalism of wrestling, even through some adversity and hard times. And your guest tonight delivered performances that are at the pinnacle of anybody's profession. At times this summer, when crowds were not great, when crowd enthusiasm could have been much less, but never failed to give a top performance. And second off, presented what I felt like was part of the best match on a weekly episode of an American television wrestling program this year, and that was the match with Sting on Worldwide Wrestling earlier. Because of all these factors, we have named, and it's the first time I've ever announced it before the annual, we have named Cactus Jack the Matt Watch Man of the Year.
Man of the Year?
For 1991, and that goes along a tradition, 1988, Eddie Gilbert, 1989 was Terry Funk. Last year we gave it to the wrestling television viewer because we didn't think there was anything extraordinary that anybody did that really merited it other than the viewer having to endure much of what they did. But this year, this man's professionalism and performance, I think, has stood out above that of anyone in this field, and Cactus, is my pleasure.
Well, thanks, Steve.
You got all of New York City. All of New York City's cheering now.
See, I'm 68th Street, too.
See, John never informed me of this. I really feel like this has become This Is Your Life, Cactus Jack, and I think I was going to call him up and tell him I didn't feel like riding along to New York City and just calling in on the telephone. I'm happy I came, and like I said to Dave, thanks to your readers who like what I do, because it does make a difference.
Well, I think there's no question that, as we said a couple of weeks ago, now Dave has mentioned this many, many times, of course. Dave and I are great colleagues and friends, and I think I can echo anything he has said previously. In a profession that is so turbulent, has so much turmoil, and in so many instances where ego goes before what's best for the business, I think you have truly personified what many of us wish all professional wrestling would be like. And as many of the callers who've called in here before this evening, you've never failed to give a top performance, in my view, and I think in the view of many readers of Matt Watch. And I'm looking forward. I've already written the profile to go along with the Man of the Year award, and I'm looking forward to the readers being able to read about that in the Matt Watch Annual.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, Steve. When you voted Terry Funk Man of the Year, the piece that you wrote was one of the best pieces I've ever read, and it really almost, and I'm not just saying this, it almost put a tear in my eye reading some of the things that Terry Funk went through to make him the Man of the Year in your eyes. And if I got any of it, have any of that, Terry Funk's been a big inspiration. There's been a lot of people in this business that have been very good to me, and you guys are among them, so thank you.
Well, you're quite welcome, and we just hope that 1992 is going to be an even bigger year for you. I think that the greatest period of your career is ahead of you if you stay healthy, and after taking a roll down 50 steps, I don't know how likely that is, but I really think that we need more Cactus Jacks in this profession, and I just hope you stay healthy enough that we can see the ultimate top of your career reached.
There you go. I mean, it was a great tribute from both of those journalists. Of course, the Observer, Matt Watch, The Torch, and others were so prominent back then, much more than they are today. But how did you feel? I mean, coming into your own and getting these awards?
To Man of the Year and Matt Watch, and that's a big deal. The Brody Brawling Award. I think I won it several years in a row, but that first year, obviously, there's something about that first year. I was really grateful that the fans, and I guess it was the fans who voted me that, right?
The Observer Award, yes. Matt Watch, yeah. It's a call from Steve.
It's more fun for me to watch. It's still interesting to hear me kind of staying in character a little bit as Cactus Jack. That was some treacherous water to wade in at that time. And there was always, it was kind of risky to be on camera or on radio with the newsletter guys, because there was still some people in the business, who really thought poorly of them. And, now that we all talk smart, it seems strange, that there was a time where they were, so maligned. They're still maligned. I think anybody, obviously Dave makes his living doing that. But for people like Don, I imagine you weren't making too much money writing those profiles, and you put a lot of passion into it. And so I think it's always very flattering that someone will spend a lot of time, unless they're spending a lot of time burying you, and then it's not flattering.
Yeah, I mean, Bob had his job full-time. Donnie was a freelancer. For me, it was buying your time, doing what you can to keep the lights on, keep the rent paid, and just be in the business. And it was very difficult when you had to buy your time every week. It was truly a great, great show. And, of course, we got more next week when we go over that live remote from the Press Box Cafe that took place in Brooklyn, New York. Before we wrap up this edition of the show, we want to remind you that you can email us questions if you'd like them answered. That email address is prowrestlingspotlightja@gmail.com. Also, no matter what platform you listen to this show on, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Google, Podbean, Audacity, iHeart, they all have links you could share on social media. That really helps us grow the audience. And if you're listening on Apple, make sure you give it a 5-star review. and write us a nice review there as well, if you can. That goes a long way. Greatly, greatly appreciated. So this will wrap up this edition of John Arezzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight. You could join our private group at facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast and Radio Show. Our public page to share history is facebook.com/John Arezzi's Matt Memories. There's a private group there as well. We have a YouTube channel that's up and running and got about 1,300 subscribers to it now. Just go to that, youtube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. So it's the Pro Wrestling Spotlight channel on YouTube. Subscribe to that channel now. You can follow me on Twitter at John Arezzi. Instagram is the same, at John Arezzi. And if you'd like a signed and numbered copy of my book, Matt Memories, we still have copies available. Send me an email, john@mattmemories.com. We have merchandise available right now. Forward Merch is our merchandise partner in New Hampshire. And we have a Pro Wrestling Spotlight store ready to ship some great stuff to you right now on the site. T-shirts, caps, autographed posters, signed books, and more available now. tinyurl.com/PWS store. That's tinyurl.com/PWS store. Don't forget to check out our sister podcast, Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, covering all the shows I covered from the Mecca of all arenas, 50 years to the day the show takes place. There are 5 episodes currently available covering WWWF Madison Square Garden cards from August of 1971 right through February 21st of 1972, and more each and every month. Current episode features the rematch between Professor Toru Tanaka and Pedro Morales in their title match for the WWWF title. And check it out wherever you hear your favorite podcast. Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden is co-hosted by Tim Poutre, written and researched by Richie Garcia. John Arezzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast is a production of Matt Memories, LLC. Our co-host is Bob Smith. Our producer and editor is Alex Robertson. Donnie Liable covers the time capsule each and every week. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight's creative director is our friend Marsh. And thanks to our Patreon executive producers, Jeremy Priest and Matt Walsh, and all the patrons for your support for the production of this show. Until next week, when we relive more history with you, this is John Arezzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.